Hey, Petty fans, welcome back to the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast. This is episode 2. Nice, quick 10 months out from episode 1, of course. What a crazy year it's been. But we're back, and we're glad to be back. Today is January 8th, as we sit here in Welcome, North Carolina. My name is Bradley Sisson. I'm over all of the digital media here at Richard Petty Motorsports. Alongside me, I've got my buddy, producer Chris Sullivan.
Yep, I'm Chris Sullivan. A lot of the videos you see on our social media channels, that's me. Some of the photography, not all of it, but well, mostly video stuff.
Yeah, you're pretty good behind the camera. I'll give you that.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much.
So if you're new, if you didn't get a chance to hear our first episode, this is the podcast for us here at Richard Petty Motorsports. It's definitely racing focused, but it's not necessarily current racing focused. You know, our goal with this podcast is to have team members, NASCAR personalities, you know, whoever we can find that's got insight into the sport and cool stories to join us and tell those stories. You know, hopefully we can provide you guys some good content and some behind the scenes insight into what we do on a daily basis. And I think we've got that today. Our first episode that we recorded last year was with our gas man, Ian Anderson. And that was, I know,
Fueler.
Right. Okay. Excuse me.
Big guy. What is he's like 6'6", 6'7". I mean, I'm a tall dude, but he was huge.
Yeah, he's definitely an imposing figure, but you got to be if you're going to like manhandle those giant, you know, fuel cans. And we had a great time with that interview. I really encourage everybody to go back and listen to it. You'll learn a lot about his position and his background, but today we have Jim Davis, who is our tire specialist. Great guy, been around for a good bit in the sport, so he's super knowledgeable and has a lot of cool stories to tell. I think they're really going to enjoy this interview.
Yeah, he's another one of those like Ian that he's got. I mean, we clicked in on the podcast and we sat here and talked for another 30 minutes. Yeah. So I mean, he's one of those that we're just gonna. He'll be one of those reoccurring figures, and we're going to bring these podcasts a lot more frequently. So
yeah,
now that we've got clearance to sit 12 feet apart and
something like that. Yeah, we're definitely social distance here in the conference room. I'm at one end of the table. JD's at the other end of the table. So we're being very cautious, but we want to make sure we keep these rolling. So I think this will be great for you guys. So we really want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you think. But yeah, like I said, we're right here in January. First one of 2021. Looking forward to the season. Of course, we got Eric Jones coming on board to drive the number 43 Chevy.
Got us a wheelman.
Oh, yeah. So looking forward to that. Daytona's right around the corner. There's a lot of prep going on here at the shop with not only the cars, but pit equipment. You know, everything's freshly painted, shined up, ready to look our best when we go down to Florida here pretty soon. So that's where we're at, you know. Obviously, last year's season was one for the ages with all of the challenges that we went through, but I appreciate your support, unwavering support through all of that. Means a lot. So with that being said, Chris, I think it's time to get into our guest interview.
Guest interview, but before we do the guest interview, we are going to have a message from our sponsor.
Ooh, who's that?
Petty's Garage.
Ah, let's hear it. All right, before we get to our guest, JD, I want to quickly touch on today's title partner for the podcast, which is Petty's Garage. Chris, are you familiar with Petty's Garage?
Petty's Garage, oh man, am I familiar with Petty's Garage. It's actually kind of how I got my start in videography and photography.
Ah, well, I spent my own time up there as well.
Yeah.
Petty's Garage was founded in 2008 as the fulfillment of Richard Petty's personal passion for all things high performance.
All things high performance. Doesn't matter what it is.
Gets the blood pumping just thinking about it.
Yeah, there's some secret stuff they've got going on up there where you can't take pictures of certain areas because they really are a full-service speed shop. Mm. Everything you could possibly imagine. It was formed of King Richard's fierce competitive obsession for winning both on and off the racetrack.
And it's actually the original race shop there in Level Cross. So, you know, like you said, if those walls could talk, all the history that they've got going on there, it's pretty dang neat.
Yeah.
The expert craftsmen at Petty's Garage have built a reputation with customers and fans nationwide as the place delivering superior engines, tuning, and the highest quality performance parts that combine to provide the ultimate driving experience.
The ultimate driving experience. There's something about having a car that's been modified at Petty's Garage with 700 horsepower, and all that power is under your right foot. And they have a brand new website, freshly revamped, petties-garage.com. Go there.
Check it out.
Everything you need for your American muscle.
Petty's Garage is the only place you'll find Powered by Petty.
Powered by Petty, so, baby.
Appreciate them coming on board. And here's JD.
Yes, Jim Davis from New Philadelphia, Ohio. Ohio. I'm the tire specialist, tire technician, whatever you want to call it.
We'll go with specialist.
Specialist.
Sounds good.
Sounds fancy.
It is fancy. You got a very important job. So you're from Ohio.
Yep.
Proud to be from Ohio,
proud
I'm sure.
Proud to be from Ohio.
And what was the first racing related job you ever had? And was that in Ohio or?
Yep.
Okay.
First racing related, first paying job in racing or?
Doesn't have to be, but.
I helped a friend's dad originally at Midvale Speedway back in Ohio. And, just a friendly help your buddy out type deal. And that just snowballed into, moved to Columbus, Ohio to go to school. And, met people and met a guy who had an ASA car and ended up working for him. It was actually my first paying racing job, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. For those not familiar with the ASA, could you describe that series a little bit?
Yeah, the American Speed Association. It was a Midwestern short track series that, man, everybody grew up in. Mark Martin, Rusty Wallace, all these guys started there, and it was a traveling series. I mean, you raced a different track every couple of weeks. A lot of free crew members. You know, not many people had paying teams or whatever. And Ohio guy Gary Sainamont, who was a hotshot in the series. His dad worked at Jag's High Performance, where I worked at the time, and I was always bugging him to, hey, you know, let me go work on your car. He's like, man, we got tons of help. We don't need no help. He says, you need help. You need to go see this guy, Buddy Schrock. He lives in Plain City, Ohio, which was right by where I lived. And I'm like, really? And turns out I went up meeting Buddy Schrock and said, hey, let me work in your race car. And he's like, you know how many people I get wanting to work on my race car type deal, you know?
Here's another kid trying to come in the door.
Thinks he knows everything. And turns out I end up quitting my job at Jag's to work for him full time. He had a bar, parts store, gas station, and I had used up all my vacation one year at Jag's by May to go ASA racing. My boss at Jag's was like, hey, you know, you're out of vacation here pretty soon. And I was like, man. So I went and told Buddy Schrock, said, hey, I ain't gonna be able to go the next couple of races. I'm out of vacation time. And he's like, why don't you just come work for me? I'm like, what can
Makes
I do?
Sense.
Yeah, what can I do for you? So it turns out I was pumped gas one day, worked at the parts store 5 days, worked at the bar in the evenings. And then we went to go racing. He's like, hey, this guy has to be off this week, and he could dictate my schedule. And so I looked at it as I'm getting paid working on a race car pretty much, you know, but that was my first paying gig working on a race car.
How old were you then?
I was late 20s. I'm a little older than, you know, some of these young kids in this series.
What?
Yeah, I'm grandfathered in a lot of rules. Yeah.
Never guessed.
Yeah.
So did you have somebody in your family, in your life before that time frame that influenced your interest in racing, or did it kind of come about when you got connected with those people?
My dad was always a car guy, and I just kind of picked up from him, you know. And then, when a guy blocked down the street had a stock car, you know, and I knew his son and I were good friends, and next thing I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And I was a young kid then, 15, 16, and just every time you knew they were working on a race car, I went there, you know, just whatever I needed to do, you know, sweep floor, take out trash, whatever needed to be done. I just wanted to be there because it was cool to be where they were working on race cars at night. You know, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So how did you then transition from ASA? You're in Ohio working on ASA car, doing the Midwest stuff. you know, where does the jump to North Carolina happen?
A friend who I met in ASA moved to Ohio to help with the Shrocks. We also had a buddy also took care of Mike Kofer, who used to be the San Francisco 49ers place kicker. Mm. He went to ASA racing. The Shrock family kind of babysat, maintained his car, so he had to hire some extra help. And a friend of mine worked there for a year, and he was single, and he knew friends in North Carolina, and said he went here a year before I did, and said, there's jobs everywhere. You got to get down here. Mm. First, I was reluctant, but I was single.
What year was that?
This was 1998.
Okay, so things are booming.
Booming, yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, it was one of them, I had no experience whatsoever, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to sneak onto a truck team somewhere, and mm-hmm. I'm handing out resumes every place there was. I mean, I'm going to date myself here, went to Kinko's and got probably 50 resumes made up, you know, and I had things handed out in a day, you know, like there was that many teams at the time, you know, being truck, Nationwide, and Xfinity, and Cup Series, and I was just handing out everywhere. But I was thinking, being new, no one's going to want to hire a new guy. Got offered a Cup job first.
Just like that?
Just like that. I mean, I was here for probably a week and got my first interview, and first job offer I had, I took, you know, I'm like, I'm in, I'm taking this, you know, I'm not waiting for anything else. And it's funny, I got more offers after that, but I'm like, you know, I got this job, I'm set, I'm in the door. It's all I wanted.
Yeah.
And that was the winter of 98. I moved down here, and like I say, I started in 1999 Cup racing, and I've been here ever since.
It's such a wild time to start in the sport.
It was unreal.
I think all the time about, I mean, I love get to do what we do, you know, it's definitely a dream country for me too, but like, if there's one thing that I wish I could do, even just for like a week, would be like experience that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, it boom, just see boom. What it was like.
You know, the industrial park down in Mooresville there, Lakeside, used to be nothing but race shops. You know, now it's a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was probably 20, 25 race shops right there. The week after the series was over, you know, the year was over, it was nothing to drive through there and see forklifts carrying toolboxes. You know, the guy quit a job here, now he's got a job down here. It was like, it was that big of a boom. You know, you just had enough of this guy's crap. You're like, I quit. There's three teams down the street hiring, so you just did it. Not like, you know, everything was a boom back then, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything was a little bit different.
Yeah, that's really neat. So who was that first opportunity with when you got here?
Joe Bessie Motorsports. Joe's ran Busch North and stuff from up in Maine, but Jeffrey Bodine was a driver. And so Jeffrey's a named driver at the time. I thought this is going to be a really neat deal. And mm-hmm. it was a startup team, so I mean everything was brand new. And then we had moderate success the first year. And so the next year we're all gung-ho, like we got our feet wet. We're going to make this happen. And that's the year Jeff got in a truck wreck at Daytona mm-hmm. and basically derailed our season. And we went from sub-driver to sub-driver to sub-driver. And Jeff got back in the car and healthy. And it just never flourished like we had hoped. Mm-hmm. But just the way things happen, you know.
Right. So you started out in the trucks. I talk to you about this all the time because I am a pretty big Mark Martin fan. And I just love to hear the stories, but you know, like, talk a little bit about what it was like to work with Mark and on that crew. You know, what year? First off, like, say, like, you know, time frame that you were on his crew and kind of what that was like.
02 to 05 on the Viagra Ford, and the man is a madman. I mean, it was funny how, you know, I was starstruck at first because it was Mark Martin. He was still winning races at the time, you know, and I got hired on there, and he was so intense. Never met anybody to this day so intense about practice, you know, in testing. You know, most times you go to a test, it's kind of laid back. You're like, yeah, we'll make a change. 15, 20 minutes later, you go to a test with Mark Martin, he sits in the car. You make the change, and he doesn't get out to go get a drink, sign out. I mean, he's there
focused
for a mission.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And the guy was just, it was unreal to, I mean, it was hard to keep up. I was, you know, 20 years younger than him. I'm thinking, man, I bet this guy was unreal in his day, you know. every weekend, we had a shot to win or at least top 10, you know. Even on our worst days, we top 10, it seemed like, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was just so hard to describe the intensity he had and how good a driver he was. I mean, mm-hmm. amazing. He never won a championship, just amazing, but.
Yeah, some of my favorite stuff that you've told me is when he would call out like certain tires that he somebody study your notes
before? I would give him and the crew chief a sheet of paper with tire sets, stagger, the codes that were on the tires at the time. And the one that sticks out in my mind, we're at Darlington, where at the time we didn't have a tire set rule. You're allowed to have as many tires as you want in your pit stall. And I'll bet we had 12, 15 sets in during the race, and middle of the race, he tells the crew chief, we need to do this. I think he wanted the car tightened up or whatever, and you know, we're adjusting on the car. He says, why don't we just take the right rear from set 20 and put it with the left rear from set 12 and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, time I'm
while he's driving while the race, driving car, right? The race during car. A race.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm like, crazy guy, he's nuts. I get my sheet out and I'm like, wow, that'll work. So the next week,
this fool knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, the next week I asked him, like, where do you keep that paper at that I give you? And he says, why? Well, study it Saturday night. So I'm thinking he has like a Dick Trickle pocket or something, you know, just, that he's pulling out my sheet of paper and looking at it. And he had that stuff memorized, and it was unreal. Yeah. I mean, I've never worked with a driver since that had that same focus, and which was great because, I mean, after that, no matter where I went, I was like, this is easy, you know? That guy was it was great to do. It was really neat to be around the guy. I mean, he was an awesome person, great person.
But you had to be on your game.
But
you
didn't
slack
off.
Not that you don't now, but like.
Yeah, so what are you implying? But you know, the guy was just amazing, and man, to this day, if I see him to track, I'll make it a point to say hi to him. You know, he's just super guy. You know, people, you know, always think, oh, he was so hard on people and hard on the pit crews. He was hard on himself, you know? Right. He was just as hard on himself as anybody else, you know? I don't regret those days whatsoever. Really wish could have been with a guy and win a championship, you know? Now looking back, you're like, oh, he's going to get one eventually.
Yeah.
And I was on the farewell tour when he retired the first time, I'll do the air quotes.
Yeah.
You know, so I left after that year that he retired the first time, and because I thought, well, he's done, I don't want to stay here no more, kind of wore my welcome out at the place, went on, and he stayed for another year, and I like regretted it so much because I liked the guy so much. I mean, he was just, some days you'd leave there after practice thinking, after he yelled at you for something, you know, you're like, well, it was my fault, but you know. But yeah, I really wish I would have got to do that one more year with him. And it was so cool to see him come back part-time and have so much success and still, you know, with Michael Waltrip and the, you know, all the other cars he still drove. It's like, I bet you could put him in a car right now. And, you know, the series that Tony Stewart's starting up, I bet they don't invite Mark.
Yeah.
Because I bet he'd be embarrassed, the old guy get in the car and put the whippings to him, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I know we talk about that a lot, but it's, you know, I feel like even in that time, even in his day, like, he was so unique in his approach and like how detail oriented it was. And you know, that also brings me to my next question, which is, have you ever considered restarting your career as a commercial actor?
No, I did one commercial for Maxwell House. Didn't get the callbacks or the offers I thought I would after that, you know. But
it's a bummer.
Yeah,
your singing was like on point.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Oh, you were singing.
Oh, I sang.
Yeah,
Little Dance. Yeah, Little Dance. I think it was a precursor to the now all these reality shows of singing that. In my prime, I think I could have cleaned that up. I think Kelly Clarkson wouldn't have a TV show.
You could definitely do the Masked thing, the Masked Singer. You know, I think that would be great.
Yeah, but would you want to cover it up?
Defeats the purpose.
Yeah,
right?
Defeats the purpose.
Yeah, we're gonna have to find that video on YouTube.
It's a classic.
And link it on ours.
What was really funny is that was in somewhere between 02 and 05, I'm not sure of the year. 2015, went to work at Michael Waltrip's with Clint Boyer. We get Maxwell House as a sponsor.
Hey guys, and they're
doing,
I'm ready.
They're doing a commercial with Michael or Clint or something. I said, hey, you know your original commercial back in whatever, I'm in that. And they're like, what original commercial? None of these people were working there at the time.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So I really outdated myself. And they're like, wow, that was kind of bad. Like, there's no actors in that. That's all. That's all crew guys. There's no actors in that thing. That's real people.
That's really us singing, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We might have to cut this part out, but are you glad they didn't ask you to come do a Viagra commercial?
Yeah. 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 Viagra spent a lot of money in racing. And, you know, the race fans are great people, but they would wear you out on the weekends. Hey, you got any free samples? And,
oh, you know, no.
You're just the stuff that runs through your mind, like I could say right now, but I'm thinking, yeah, that's not the right answer, but you know.
Well, Mark talked about that on when he did Dale Jr.'s podcast about how when that deal came together, he's like, you know, I'm all for promoting good men's health, but I'm not going to say that I use the product. Reminds me, like, have you done any podcasts before? Is this your first experience with it?
My first experience, I've listened to Mark Martin's pod. I didn't listen to all of them, mm-hmm. when he was doing some of his talking about his older stuff, whatever. I watch the one Matthew Dillner produces over there, the guys at Junior Motorsports do, the three no-name spotter guys, what's it called? Quarter can't tell.
Clear all around.
You're on your own or something like that. Frank and BJ and Brian, I think they are. But I've watched that a few times.
I've heard it's good.
I don't think it's going to take off, but it's, you know, it might. You know, I've been wrong before. I thought I was wrong. I was really mistaken at the time. But
we know for a fact they're going to be listening to this one.
You think?
I would assume maybe. Yeah. So you know,
what else do they do during the week?
Well, they need pointers.
Yeah, all they do is spot. They don't really have a real job. So yeah, they're probably going to. That's probably all they do is watch this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Got to watch out for the competition.
Yeah, true. That's true.
Our studio is top of the line.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not bad. I mean,
we could use some more. What? That's classic.
Yeah.
Was that from like 92 when Richard retired? Isn't that like the?
Actually, I think it's before because I actually was watching that race the other day with my dad. You know, yeah. And Richard had the full face helmet at that time.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah.
That's
right. So that had to have been before.
That's pretty cool,
though. Which was neat to see because I didn't realize like. I don't know, just knowing that Richard's kind of an old school guy, you know, as long as his career was, I was a little surprised to see that they had converted him over to the full face helmet by 92.
Yep.
Shows you that he's always kind of been a proponent for safety.
Yeah. Yep. He still had that rag hanging out of the full face helmet to keep his mouth moist.
Yep. Yeah. That's a weird way to say it, but all right.
Yeah. I never thought I'd say moist on a podcast, but I've said it twice now, so.
JD, could you like, you know, I'm going to be honest, before coming on board here, it just never occurred to me that there was a tire specialist role. There's a lot of roles that I just never thought about. You know, I was a race fan my whole life, but you watch cars, you watch the racing, and all of the behind the scenes stuff doesn't necessarily occur to you from a fan's perspective, just from personal experience there. You know, take us through like a race day at the racetrack from your eyes.
Yep. Starts off with usually the worst part of the job is Goodyear has all the tires in one area and you've got to pretty much move to somewhere to work on them. You know, and that's the worst part. You get 10, 12 sets or whatever, and you've got to move them somewhere. So there's 30 some of us with carts and it's an organized chaos basically, but we get it done. But it seems like it looks easy on TV, you know, all the tires are all there. They're done. It must probably just buy them and put them there. And a lot goes into it, you know. Measuring every tire, there's a lot of data on the tire that, you know, we keep track of, and that's how we put them into sets. And usually you get that stuff done about an hour before the race, you know, honestly, and then go back to the truck, get something to eat, head to pit road. And it's funny how you think, since you're at the racetrack, you see everything that goes on at the racetrack. I would come home and my wife would say, man, did you see this wreck or did you see that wreck? And I'm like, nah, I missed that. How'd you miss that? I'm like, I was working. I didn't get a chance to see that or whatever. But it's there's so much going on behind it. You don't really see that, that to put it all together. That it's neat to see. Neat to be a part of. Really neat to be a part of it.
So you go and you get your tires. You know, bring them back. What are you looking for? Like, what's the first thing you're checking?
Well, check the air pressure. Goodyear has a recommended air pressure. We check and make sure they're still at that. Measure them. And that's the biggest thing we do is measure them. Mm-hmm. There's a little variance in sizes, and that changes, you know, that'll change your stagger, which will change the setup of the car. So that's the biggest thing. And then there's date codes, there's builder codes, stuff like that on the tire that we keep track of, and stuff like that.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Fun stuff, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you're also, like, involved in pit stops and everything too, right? Like, there's a lot more that, you know, you've got your tire specialist is your main, you know, title, but there's a lot of other jobs and things you do here and there that help out the team, you know, on a daily basis.
A simple thing all I do is on the pit stops, I throw a hose out for the front tire changer so that the hose is already kind of out there for him to make his run around the car. And as he's running back, I pull it back, make sure it's everybody's way type stuff. It's funny how you try to describe it. You're like, what do I do on a pit stop? Because you do it so you do it all the time. It's almost like habit. You know what to, you know, and we've been together as a team. Most of us have been together for a long time. It's like,
yeah,
you don't even know, you know, when you watch on a video, like sometimes we'll go down and do pit stops and you're like, wow, I didn't realize that happens back at the car, or I didn't realize I was that close to that happening to me or whatever, you know. But it's neat to see, you know, to date myself again, back when I started, everybody who went on the road did something on a pit stop. And slowly it got to, you know, you flew in a Jackman and you flew in a Jackman and a tire changers. And next thing you know, there's not a guy on the road that does a pit stop, you know,
right.
Everybody's behind the wall now. So mm-hmm. just how that's progressed to speed things up. Obviously, if they thought we were too slow, I guess. I don't
know. So what were your pit stop positions back in the day?
Like, I carried tires back in the day, but it was pit. We had a little contest.
I was trying to get you this story where you competed with the guys down the hill.
Yeah, we a couple weeks ago, at the end of the year, a couple races ago, I joked with one of the tire changers. You know, I said, man, hide back here behind the pit box, man. I think the cops are coming. He's like, the cops are coming? Why? I said, that stabbing you put out there trying to get them lug nuts off. And he got all irate and mad. And he says, if you think it's so easy, why don't you do it? I was like, just playing, man. But I'll take you up on that. So the road guys actually went down. We did two pit stops. Our fastest was like 16.9, which isn't good. But we had no practice. We didn't stretch.
Oh, that's important.
I was a little sore the next day. Didn't stretch. But it was just, we had fun with it. They thought it was cool. We come down and did it. You know, the pit crew coach down there, we walk in, he's like, who are these guys?
You know? Meanwhile, you got like ZZ Top playing in the background, you know, as you like slowly come through the door looking around.
We didn't get no walk-in music like we thought we should have. But yeah, it was really cool to do that. I hadn't done that in a long, long time. And we all, as we get back, we're like talking to ourselves going, we need to do it again, but we need to practice first. And we need to stretch first. We need to, you know, we're like, no, we're going to waste too much time on just trying to have fun. We're just going to waste time. And someone's probably going to get hurt.
So yeah.
We probably shouldn't do that.
I think that's the competitive spirit that everybody on the team has, mm-hmm. you know. And you work with the same guys, you know, week in, week out after a while. And, you know.
And I got the bad habit of poking fun at people. You know, I'm that bad guy.
Well, you have to, though, I think.
You know, I try to keep it light. I don't take too much serious. I try to be the lighthearted guy. And like I say, I poke fun at the pit crew guys sometimes. They all do a great job. I don't want their jobs. I'm not trying to take their jobs. They know that, but I like poking fun at them. Plus, they're all big guys, you know. They still work out. I haven't worked out in, I think I'm up to 10 push-ups a year now or something. You know? I still try to keep limber and stuff.
But stay loose.
Yeah, I don't want to. Really good all the way.
Never know when you're going to get thrown into a line of fire.
You never know.
So, how have you managed? You know, obviously, the 2020 season was what it was, right? It was tough and a lot of adapting and had to do what we had to do. But I want to know how you managed without your supervisor Dale Inman being at the track every week.
I tell you what, I missed Inman. I miss him right now. It's nice to have his input every week, whether you want it or not. It's nice to have. And we used to see him every Tuesday and every weekend. And, you know, he always, every time we tell him about something that's hard on us, he's like, oh, it hadn't always been this easy. You know, he loves telling us how they had to drive to Riverside in the car they raced, you know, and then drive it back. And it was tougher in his day, granted. But it's so cool to have Dale tell you them stories. And sometimes say, probably told you this before, and I don't stop him. I'm like, I love hearing it, you know.
Yeah.
Really miss Dale not being around as much as he used to be. And we try to call him, but his flip phone doesn't get very good service over there in Randleman, you know, I hate to say it. It's funny, we're getting ready to have a discussion with him because we were just fixing the pit box up. Where he sits has a hole in a bar that something goes into to hold up a camera or something. Well, I went to put the bolts back in there and I couldn't get nothing in there. Like, there's a bunch of paper or something there. So I took pliers and pulled candy wrappers.
No.
Yeah.
And wow.
So we're finally like, who could have sat here? And like, Inman.
So he had just like shoved them in there?
Yeah.
You know,
and it looked, I think it's a couple years worth because, I mean, I spent 15, 20 minutes and he pulled them out one by one.
So Dale's probably up there on the pit box during the race eating. And what kind of candy was it?
I couldn't tell. They were just little tiny cellophane wrappers. And there's the whole, you can see.
It's probably mints. I bet that's
I think
that's. But he's probably in his mind thinking, no, you know, I'm just. these right here. Ain't nobody gonna find them.
In his word, hasn't always been this easy. Yeah. You know, put it in there. And
hey, at least he's not littering.
Yeah.
No. I mean,
technically,
yeah.
He was stashing them.
Yeah. I'm gonna question him the next time I see him about it. Cause
it's fitting that you were the one to find it too.
Yeah.
Y'all, I think y'all have a. I mean, Dale's. You know, he loves to chat it up and hit the pressure points with everybody on the team. But I think you and Dale have probably the closest relationship out of anybody.
Man, love Dale.
Even hard not to.
He beats me up all the time, you know, and like I say, bring him to the ground. But man, wouldn't have it any other way. Have it any other way.
What would you give? Like, what advice would you give for the drivers of today that, you know, you've kind of, you know, you've worked with guys over the years, like the Mark Martins, and but I mean, you were also at Waltrips, and you know, from your experience, like, what would you tell? Well, if you had to sit down with Eric Jones and be like, you know, here's something that would help us work together this year, what would you say?
Man, I don't have nothing.
No.
I'm open-minded with drivers, you know? I think I'm excited about working with Eric, you know? He's way younger than I am, you know? But it's neat to see that. I think he's like the last driver, actually, that can honestly say he didn't bring money to a ride. You know, he beat Kyle Busch in a late model race. Kyle got tired of it and hired him to drive his trucks. You know, honestly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you don't see it anymore. You see somebody's got a sponsor coming with him to help him, and not that that's a bad thing, but I'm excited. You know, the kid raced in Michigan, where they heard they're getting a football team again sometime soon, but that's just rumor. But I'm excited. You know, you can see the passion in him. You know, he's a short track driver from the Midwest, which is what I grew up on and with. So I think we have that in combination, but just the youth and exuberance, you know, I used to have it. It's overrated, but I think it's neat to, like I say, he's the last guy who I don't think was brought in with a sponsor, you know, and say, hey, I've got this to bring to you.
Mm-hmm.
He did it the hard way. He whooped the big guy's butt. The guy got tired of it and said, hey, instead you beat me, drive for me, you know. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I do too. I think we're all really excited, and I think we're going to whip up some people too this year.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll finish up here. We're coming right up on our time, but I got a couple, two quick questions for you, Ohio related. So, number one, are you a big Skyline Chili guy?
I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
That's more of a Cincinnati area thing.
Okay.
But when I lived in Columbus, there's a few Skyline Chilies.
Yeah. When I went to Ohio State for the Tech game a few years back, like, I went with a friend of mine from right outside of Columbus. Mm-hmm. And before we left, like, that, they were like, y'all have to go. You have to go try this. We have to do it. I was like, okay. And I was kind of confused when they put it down in front of me. I was like,
yeah, it's kind of an acquired thing. It's kind of like White Castles.
Mm-hmm.
I love White Castles. Love them. I buy the frozen ones, you know. It's not the same, but anytime we used to race Kentucky or in Indy, everyone's going to eat at St. Elmo's in Indy. I'm going to get in a bag of sliders, man. I mean,
And final question, and then we'll get you out of here. Yep. I know the answer to it. Who are you going to be rooting for in the national championship game coming up?
Who's Ohio State even playing?
Elephants, right?
Yeah. Saban's daughter's team or something right there. Yeah, I'm all about Ohio State. Win, lose, or draw.
I saw that tweet.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Win, lose, or draw. They had a great year. You know, should they have been there? Ask Clemson. Not bad for 11th ranked team.
Yeah. Clemson had to play a couple more games.
Yeah. Well, was that the excuse? They were tired, couldn't play no more. I mean, I don't know. All I can say is yabba dabba doo, not bad for 11th ranked team, you know?
I was thinking about you that entire game.
Yeah,
I was like, JD is watching this with a smile on his face.
I went into it as like, Clemson's a pretty good team, you know? I don't know what we've really got because they're pretty hit or miss.
Yeah.
As the game went on, like, man, texting with Philippe, who's a big Texas A&M guy, a bunch of us texting back and forth. I'm like, we got to stop. We're having a good game. I got to watch this, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's been a great year for me for football. The Browns are in the playoffs. I was born and raised a Browns fan. I've been through the years, you know, I was there when they moved away, you know? I mean, so to me, this is a great year. And if Browns lose Sunday, so what? They made the playoffs again, you know? I mean, great year for football in Ohio.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on our show today and helping us out with this. Yep. And also, thanks for just welcoming me into the team when I started. You're always a breath of fresh air and keeping things light. So we really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Got to have you back on.
Oh, definitely. We make this a...
I didn't even get to like half of my questions here.
Oh, man. We can do a second one any other time. Whenever you need me.
Yeah.
I'll make time for
you. I was like, I need somebody that'll talk for 30 minutes. Ah, Got it.
Yeah, he has cut me short. I got plenty more stuff I can tell you.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Thanks. So. Thanks for having me.